Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North convenience stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and sugar-free. First-round picks like watermelon, wild berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's time for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show. Brought to you by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Now, here's your host, Howard Simon.
Happy Saturday morning. Beautiful fall morning out there. My name is Howard Simon. Welcome to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Induction Show, Class of 2025. Show number two in a series of shows, four shows, every Saturday morning at 10, where we introduce you to the inductees in the class of 2025. Today on the show, we're going to be chatting with Mike Buczkowski, president of Rich Baseball Operations, Megan Sittler about her outstanding hockey career. The team of distinction in this year's class would be the Kenmore West football teams from 1967 through 69. The captain of the 67 Blue Devils, Rob Sonata Maria, will join us. And Ron Carr from the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame board will join us as well to talk about two of the members who were being inducted posthumously. Jim Peel, former football and baseball coach and director of athletics for University of Buffalo, and great middleweight boxer Joey Giambra. That's all coming up on the show. Plus, of course, I will give you information on how you can buy tickets to attend this year's dinner. Tell you about that in just a moment and give you all the information you need about the fabulous auction items that are available for bid right now at gbshof.com. All that coming up. And when we get back, we'll kick things off with our first guest. Mike Buczkowski will join us in a moment on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
The 35th annual dinner is Tuesday, November 11th at the Buffalo Convention Center, and it'll all begin at 5 o'clock with a cocktail reception, dinner at 7, speeches to follow. If you'd like to purchase tickets, you can take advantage right now of early bird ticket pricing, so you can save a little money. Now, the early bird pricing is only good through October 14th. So do not forget, if you want to go to the dinner, go to gbshof.com. You can buy individual seats. You can buy an entire table if you need one. But go there now and take advantage of the early bird pricing. Again, gbshof.com. When you get to their website, you will also see popping up on your screen a link to the auction. Go to the auction items. There's something for everybody. I'll tell you about some of the items as we go through the show today, but that is also available for bid right now. Again, gbshof.com. We are joined by the president of Rich Baseball Operations, Mr. Mike Buczkowski, who is going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Mike, good morning. It's Howard. Congratulations.
Thanks, Howard. Good morning. Great to be with you.
Well, I always love talking to somebody I know and have a history with, so I'm very happy for you. Pete Weber says hi, by the way. Listen, you're like a pro at this Hall of Fame thing, Mike. You've got a few of them, so you've gone through this before, but Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, what does this one mean to you?
Yeah, it is. It still haven't totally wrapped my head around it, I guess. I mean, it's to be included with some of the names of, you know, people that have helped shape the sports landscape in Buffalo. And, you know, I look at the names and, you know, to be part of it is just, it's a little too much sometimes when I start looking at all the names. So I try not to focus too much on it.
Let's go back to 1987. What's the story of how you started way back then with the Bisons?
Yeah, 1987. I actually was interning in the Sabre season in 86, Howard. I had the great experience of sitting next to Rick Jenneret for a season in the booth, and mm-hmm. the games were on WBN at the time, and then the Bisons last year at War Memorial Stadium, and their PR director left in the middle of the season in June, and Mike Bellani was the general manager, called John DeMurrell, John the Pearl DeMurrell, and he said, you know, we're looking for someone. Do you have anybody? And John recommended, and I think I interviewed on a Thursday and started on a Monday. I think whoever was first in the interview was going to get the job. started. That was the last year at War Memorial before moving to then Pilot Field.
Yeah, your timing is great. You come in right as they get ready to make that move. So 1988, Pilot Field opens up. What do you remember specifically about the day of the opener and the opener itself?
Well, a couple of things. The day was a cold day, cold, windy, blustery day, but we knew that it was going to be a special day. I think that day is one of the top, you know, sports dates in Buffalo history, opening up that ballpark. And I remember there being so much going on. I was media relations, public relations at the time. So we had, I remember Spencer Christian coming from Good Morning America was there, and writers from USA Today and the New York Times, in addition to, of course, all of the local media. And you know, it was really my first big event. And yeah, I remember being driving that day to the ballpark, and although it was sunny, it was cold, and I just remember having these tremendous butterflies in my stomach about, boy, I hope that everything goes well. And of course, it did. You know, Bisons won 1-0. Tom Prince hits a home run, and the home team wins. The ballpark got rave reviews. So yeah, it was a great day.
Now you go on to be general manager. Now you're president of Rich Baseball Operations. And in your time working at the organizations, Mike, you've been around various league championships. 1997, the Bisons win their first championship in 36 years. If you flash back to that, can you just talk a little bit about the significance of that moment and what it meant in the bigger picture of Bisons and Buffalo baseball history?
Yeah, it was a long time between championships, and Bob and Mindy Rich were the owners, had never won a championship. We came really close in 89 and 90. We lost a one game playoff, and 91 we made the playoffs, and 92 we didn't win it, and there were so many, 95 lost in a game. So there had been heartbreak after heartbreak, and 97 comes around. We played the Iowa Cubs, the Chicago Cubs team, won the first two games at home, had to travel to Des Moines for three. And I remember we were winning that game. Brian Graham was our manager, and he told me a quick story. Howard, he told me, look, we got a secret weapon today. David Weathers, who had pitched great for us down the stretch, it's his day to throw in the bullpen today, but if we're winning, I'm not going to have him do his bullpen session. We're going to bring him into the game, and he's pitching great. And if we're winning, hopefully he closes out the game. And I remember telling Bob and Mindy, hey, we got a secret weapon today. If David Weathers is coming to pitch, great, great. Sure enough, we're winning. Sure enough, here comes David Weathers. And I don't think he got an out. I mean, every ball was a rocket off the wall, and singles and doubles and walks. And I remember not even being able to look at Bob and Mindy because the secret weapon was, and I think Bob said something, we should have kept this weapon a secret. And they ended up tying the game. We went to extra innings. Sean Casey, who went on to great major league career, hit the home run in the top of the 10th inning, and then we finished it off in the bottom of the inning on a double play for the first championship, and it was just euphoric. It was a great, great day.
Now, one championship you win at home in 2004. What did it mean to be able to see that happen in your ballpark with your fans and have everybody there and that whole celebration that ensued?
Yeah, it was really special because we won in 97, as we said, in Des Moines. Then we won the next year. We won in Durham, so we had never won a championship at home. And when we won those championships, I remember we'd have championship celebrations the next day at the ballpark, and you know, thousands of fans would come out, but they weren't able to see it. So to win it at home was really special. And that only happened because we were playing the Richmond team at the time, the Braves, and Hurricane Ivan had gone through. And so they could not play the games in Richmond. We had to play all of the games in Buffalo. And so that was really the only reason why we were able to win it, and winning it at home. And I remember Marty Brown was our manager, and he walked the trophy around the, you know, around the perimeter of the ballpark, and fans were just, maybe that and the one game playoff game in 90 were the two best baseball crowds. I mean, it was, there was moans and groans on every pitch and every out, and excitement was building the whole time. It was like being at a, you know, at a big league postseason game. And it was a great atmosphere, and just happy that we're able to do it at home.
All right. Speaking of big leagues, of course, we need to talk to you about the brief visit by the Toronto Blue Jays, and maybe not necessarily year one because there were no fans in the park. But when the Blue Jays are here, I know I went to a couple of games at the ballpark with my family, Mike. What, you know, I don't know if you're like a proud dad or what were you experiencing when you were sitting there at the ballpark and here is Major League Baseball being played in downtown Buffalo?
It was surreal. Even the year before with no fans, you know, I would be at the games, but there'd be nobody there. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, walking around the ballpark saying, there's a Major League Baseball game going on and there's nobody here. How, you know, this is, it's great, but how sad is that, right? You know, that our fans don't get to see it. And then the next year, of course, you know, fans were allowed in. And yeah, it was emotional. We had spent a lot of time as an organization, you know, pursuing a National League expansion franchise when the ballpark first opened, and it didn't happen, but for a long, long time, that was our goal and our dream, and it didn't happen. But then, you know, that many years later, because of the crazy circumstances, to actually see Major League Baseball in Buffalo for the first time in over 100 years, and it was special. It was really hectic for our staff because the Bisons were playing in New Jersey and the Blue Jays were here, and we had to move people around. And when it was over, we were glad it was over, I can tell you that. But it was great that it was able to come to Buffalo.
You referenced Bob and Mindy Rich. Minor League Baseball is here, comes back here because of Bob and Mindy Rich. And they hold, as you know, Mike, a very significant spot in the history of Buffalo baseball. Can you just talk about what they have meant to Buffalo baseball and your relationship with the Riches?
Yeah, my relationship has just been tremendous. I mean, people sometimes will say, boy, you've worked a long time, 37 years, and it doesn't feel like it just because of, you know, of the environment that they've created and the vision that they've created for Bison baseball. You know, they want Salem Field to be a place where families can gather. They want it to be affordable. They want it to be fun, and we want to be able to provide high level of baseball. But to me personally, Howard, I mean, they've given me so much room to grow, and they've trusted me and trusted me with the team, and they've been the greatest business example that I could ever hope for. I mean, they're just tremendous people, and they love the Bisons, and so that's why it doesn't ever feel like it's been that many years. You know, we start over and every year, and they challenge us to innovate and to do things new, and it keeps that energy level really, really high. But to be around people that care so deeply about something and then, you know, be part of executing their vision has just been tremendous for me.
One last thing I wanted to bring up. I was thinking about this driving in, and I've thought about it before because Pat Malacara, who does your games now with Duke, and they do a fantastic job, by the way, Mike. Yeah. Pat sent me a roundtable you did. I think it was back during the COVID era, and you had done a roundtable discussion with the former Bison voices. And I just wanted to point out how you guys are pretty good at picking announcers. Now, Pat's got his dream job, so I don't know that Pat will ever want to leave Buffalo. But Greg Brown, Pete Weber, Jim Rosenhaus, Ben Wagner, respectively, are now Pittsburgh Pirates, Nashville Predators, Cleveland Guardians, and Baltimore Orioles. That's a pretty good job there of selecting broadcasters.
we've gotten pretty lucky. The one that I talk most about, Howard, is Jim Rosenhaus, because Pete Weber had left. And mm-hmm. I remember thinking, how in the world do you replace Pete Weber? Well, you don't. You don't replace Pete Weber. You know, you just hope to get someone that, you know, was very good, and Rosie turned out to be, you know, here a long time and great. And you, and as you said, you know, down with the Guardians and but it's fun. I love going on, you know, the different stations and listening to the play-by-play, and you hear Ben and you hear Rosie talking and Greg Brown, of course, in Pittsburgh. And it's just, I have fun with those guys. You know, whenever I might catch them making a mistake during the game, and I'll text them right away and say, hey, you know, it's not the way you did things in Buffalo here. You had the wrong number of outs in that inning. What's going on? And have a lot of fun with those guys, and they've all remained good friends.
Well, you got to make a little more room on the mantle, right? You got Tymon Hall of Fame. You've got Buffalo Baseball Hall of Fame. Now you got to make sure you have another spot for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame.
I guess if you hang around long enough, right, you get the accolades.
That's how I got into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. I think you're right, Mike. If you just hang around long enough, they think, well, we better put him in something. No, yours is earned. Congratulations on it.
Thank you. Thanks, Howard.
Mike, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Mike Bujkowski joining us, president of Rich Baseball Operations and member of the class of 2025 of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. We will switch from baseball to hockey when we get back. And a woman who had an outstanding hockey career and, of course, is in an incredible hockey family. Megan Sittler will join us next. Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame induction show continues on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
Yeah. I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
Class of 2025 will also include Megan Sittler for her outstanding hockey career. And Megan is joining us right now. Megan, it's Howard. Good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, you get the call. You find out you're going in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. What are some of the first thoughts that went through your mind at the time?
I was very surprised and definitely very thankful, honored, and yeah, it's hard to actually let it sink in.
Hard to wrap your arms around that, I guess.
Yeah.
Go back to the beginning, Megan, when you decided to play hockey. I mean, at the time, there weren't a ton of opportunities for girls hockey, right? I mean, that was, at least here mm-hmm. in Western New York, it was still forming leagues, schools, and programs. So what made you want to play hockey at that point?
I was two when I learned how to skate, and we always had a pond in our backyard. So, but then when I was five, my dad played for Philly, and we were living in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And my brother played, and so I think I just wanted to do what they were doing because it was really fun. And so I ended up playing on a boys' team. So there wasn't actually girls hockey back then in an option for me. But so I played all the way until 2 years of checking, and then that's when I joined the Bisons in Buffalo for Warren Gilman's.
Oh, yeah, who went in last year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So your dad, I'm sure no one's ever asked you about your dad, so this will be a refreshing change for you, right? For those folks who don't know, Megan's dad is Daryl. You may have heard of him. I know you mentioned Philly. I think all of us remember him with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So what mm-hmm. was it like, having a star NHL player for your dad?
I think as a kid, you don't understand that. And it's kind of confusing because he would go away like for 2 weeks and mm-hmm. come back, and everyone wanted his attention. And so I remember feeling like I just wanted a normal dad, yep. but everyone would definitely say how lucky I was. But there were also like amazing experiences that we got to have because of that, like family trips with events that he was doing. But actually it's a different life when you're growing up, as a kid. So, I think I look back on it now and I see more of like, I can appreciate what it meant and what he was doing at that time. But as a kid, it's a little confusing.
Yeah. You mentioned your brother, Ryan, who goes on and gets drafted into the NHL. So did you and your brother Sittler, the name attached to after your first name is famous with hockey. Did you two ever feel any pressure because of who your dad was because of your last name?
I definitely know my brother did, in a way that was heavy and hard because mm-hmm. he's also a guy. And so he had like shoes to fit into, but, for me, it was more, I think, because at that time I was a woman or a young girl, and it was more of just an experience and a journey that I was playing with the boys, and then I didn't know where it would go. So there wasn't, like at that time, there wasn't the Olympics as a child to look into, so it was less pressure for me and more exciting, but definitely my brother for sure felt that.
Now, I want to ask you about, I read this, and I want to make sure it's true, that you and your brother used to play roller hockey in the basement of your family's home.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to let you know, my brothers and I did the same thing in our basement, which left a lot mm-hmm. of marks on the walls and holes in the ceiling from follow-throughs with the hockey blade after a shot.
Ours was not finished, so it was cement walls. So, and we used a tennis ball a lot.
Oh yeah, no, we used the Mylek plastic hockey ball, and our ceiling was finished. So the plastic blades would always go through the ceiling.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it was fun, right?
Oh yeah, and I think that helped me develop stick handling skills.
Well, you're in tight places there, and there's not a lot of room in the basement.
No.
So, you go on and you play college hockey and you have a fantastic career at Colby. But I wanted to ask you about your experiences playing for U.S. national teams. At what point did you start to realize you had a shot, or you really wanted to have a shot at playing for Team USA?
When I was 15, they started a development program in the U.S. for kids, like younger ages, so I think it was 15 to 17, and we could go to the to the national team camps, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Yep.
And so I got picked in New York in the top 10 to get to do that, and then we went out to Minnesota, and then the national team players were there too, the older women, and so it just became this thing that I got to be a part of, and then they were training us and developing us for that. And then the Olympics, the first Olympics became something after that, actually, that it was going to become something that we could aim for, which was really exciting.
I've always been fascinated talking to athletes, Megan, who ever have a chance to basically play for the country, wear the jersey, whatever. 96 Pacific Rim Championships, you do. What was it like to put on a jersey that said USA and step on the ice and represent our country in competition?
Yeah. My first experience was in Finland, and we got to go play in a small tournament. And I remember my lineman and I from Kobe, Barb Gordon was with me, and we both put it on, and we were like, oh my gosh, we can't believe that we're wearing this. And it was definitely an amazing moment. And standing on the blue line and hearing the national anthem, is something that like we would pretend or dream about. So it definitely, you do soak it in, and it is surreal, and it's a very proud moment.
Very cool. You know, earlier you were mentioning when you were playing in Jersey and your dad was in Philly, there really weren't opportunities for girls to play. That's changed, of course. You could look at high school hockey. You look at the explosion of women's collegiate hockey and professional leagues. How much have you enjoyed seeing that expansion, feeling good about where girls and women's hockey has gone over the years?
I think it's amazing and so good for women and so good for young girls. I think hockey is such a great sport because for women, like, we get judged so much on our looks or things that when you're out there on the ice, you're in a cage, you're behind your equipment, and you just get to go out and perform. And it's a nice, it's just a great place to show your strength and, have great teammates and just have, it's a very fun sport. And so for all these girls to get to play it, and they're so strong and so powerful and amazing, and the women are bringing in lots of fans, which is really awesome to see too, and they're getting paid, which is great. So of it is, it's amazing, and I'm so glad that they get to do that.
So before we finish, what about life after hockey? Where has life taken you? What are you doing these days?
I work with people through more of the mind now. Like, I have a master's degree in social work, but I've also studied energy healing and meditation and things like that. So I work with people on the mental aspect of life and through self-regulation and things that I used actually in sport that I didn't realize. I think elite athletes are good at doing that, and people, CEOs and companies. So actually helping everybody be able to tap into that zone inside of themselves for whatever they want to use it for in their life for success.
Well, Megan, thank you for sharing all the stories. We're glad you're doing well. And again, congratulations on this great honor. Enjoy that special night with your family.
Thank you so much.
Megan Sittler is in the class of 2025, Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Again, if you'd like to go to the dinner, it is Tuesday, November 11th. It is at the Buffalo Convention Center. It really is a fabulous night. Just so cool walking around during the cocktail reception and seeing all the dignitaries there and the greats in Buffalo sports history and having a chance to meet all these people and then listening to all the speeches and the stories. It really is a blast if you've never done it before. You can purchase tickets right now by going to gbshof.com, and you can take advantage of the early bird ticket pricing. Now, that is going through October 14th, so you can save some money right now. Again, you can buy individual seats. If you'd like to buy an entire table, you can do that as well. gbshof.com, but please don't forget, early bird pricing ends October 14th. You can also take part in the auction, which I'll tell you about in the next segment. We'll give you an idea about some of the great items that are available for bid, and proceeds from the auction will benefit the Amateur Sports Development Fund, which is a very important thing that the Hall does, funding organizations that, well, need the money to help exist. So we'll tell you about auction items as well. Take a little break. When we come back, one of the things they've added in recent years to the Hall is a team of distinction. This year's team of distinction, Ken West football, 1967 through 69. The captain of the 67 team will join us next on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
So the team of distinction, as I mentioned, Kenmore West football, 1967 through 1969. We are joined by the captain of the 67 squad, Rob Santa Maria, and he will represent the Ken West team of distinction, teams of distinction. Rob, it's Howard Simon. Good morning. Welcome to the show and congratulations.
Thank you, Howard. It's a great honor to be here. Thank you for contacting me.
Well, our pleasure. So, I mean, I was not around here at that time. I was not living here, so this is all new to me. So let's talk about the 67 team, and you're the captain of that team, and that started an amazing three-year run. Were you guys good going into that season, Rob, or was there something going on that you thought we're about to be like a super really good high school football team?
Well, we were very blessed. The junior varsity the year before, we were undefeated, and many of the players were tremendous at that point in time. And so we had no idea how far we could go, but we were very fortunate and ultimately had a great team.
As you think back on the 67 season, what stood out about that team? What do you think made it so successful as a group?
Okay. First of all, we were living at an amazing time in history with the baby boom. Kenmore West had a class of about 1,000 people, and we had close to 200 people try out for varsity football that year. So we were very deep in talent, and we were also blessed to have probably one of the best coaches you could ever have, and a gentleman named Coach Jules Yakupovich, who was extremely innovative and invented what was called the radar defense. And we can get into the details of that. But boy, we had a number of things that were going our way. And, you know, the baby boom was booming big time. And Kenmore was the first suburb outside of Buffalo. So we had a wealth of people and talent, and a coach that could mold us into one special group of people.
Yeah, I want to ask you in a moment about the radar defense, because I read an interesting stat, a note about that. But talk a little bit more about Coach Yakupovich, and what was he like to play for? What was he all about as a head coach?
Okay. Coach Yakupovich was a mimic-type person of Vince Lombardi, total authoritative. You looked at him the wrong way, said the wrong thing in a disrespectful way. You'd be running laps around the track at Crosby football field. So the gentleman, he was an amazing person because he had unbelievable knowledge of football. He wrote his own book called The Radar Defense. And but playing for him, you know, it was a time when people respected teachers, coaches, parents, and we were right on the cusp of the 60s when things started to fall apart. But we were right at we were very fortunate to be at a time when things were tremendously focused, and we had another opportunity. We were the first team in Western New York to go platoon system, meaning we had enough players to be deep enough to, you know, have teams for offense, defense, special teams. And as a result, you know, we were quite a force to be reckoned with, being fresh and having highly focused football practices where offense and defense were able to focus on the opponent. And, so, you know, we had a number of very innovative things that were happening due to the tremendous coaching that we had. Coach Dave Fleischman ran the offense and defense together with Coach Jules Yakupovich.
You know, there's a phrase when someone's an expert, they say, well, they wrote the book on something. I think it's really cool that he literally wrote the book. He wrote a book on radar defense. So what, in a nutshell, what was the radar defense?
Okay, the radar defense really featured the whole crux of it was, first of all, you were standing up at all times versus your opponent that was in a three-point stand. So the entire defense was about lateral movement versus brute force penetration. So you're standing up versus the three-point stance. So as a result, the amazing thing, our radar team averaged like 161 pounds per player.
Yeah, I read that, and that's, I wanted to ask you about that. That's incredibly undersized.
It was. But the amazing thing, when you're standing up, and this is how sophisticated Yakupovich was. He would give us hand signals. I would get hand signals from the sideline, and he would tell us what defense to put in. And we had a number of different formations and shifts. And the whole idea was we would totally confuse the daylights out of a team because they never knew whether, you know, what – you know, like if you played tackle, you could have been a linebacker. You could have been a defensive halfback. So we were always in motion. That was quite innovative at the time. And so, you know, being in the standup, like if you were the defensive tackle, like what I was many times in that position, being a standup, you were able to literally read what the opposing team was doing. So reading what the movements were, we were taught in our practices how to exactly know where to be at any time on the football field. And when you're in the stand-up, it gives you almost like a half a second or a split second to outmaneuver a much bigger player and puts you in a position to make the tackle. And I learned a lot of swear words. People did not like being outmaneuvered. And so it was actually a blast to play the radar defense.
Now,
it also, by avoiding contact real quick, it also eliminated a lot of injuries because you weren't going for brute force.
Yeah.
And we were taught to be thinkers. It was innovative.
That's brilliant. Now, another thing I read, Rob, was that Kenmore West football, 67 and, of course, 68, and then the unbeaten 69 team was such a big deal. You guys played before huge crowds for high school football, right?
That is correct. We had so the Kenmore East, Kenmore West was always the pinnacle of the year. And sometimes we would get up to 10,000 people. And most of the games, you know, when we were winning, were anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 people. So one of the funny things, our school, we actually won a school spirit contest, and we were awarded this cannon that was like Civil War size. And every time our team would score a touchdown, we had a gentleman named Tom Williams that would blow off this cannon at Crosby Field, and the teams were averaging, the 67 team averaged like 38 points a game. The famous Super Bowl champion team for the national champion, Kenmore West 1969 team, averaged 48 points. So every time there was a point scored, there was a cannon that went off, and it was quite an event.
Yeah, I was gonna, the 69 team outscored opponents 386 to 67. That's a lot of cannons.
That's right. Mm. That was 5.7 points per game over the 3 years of the teams.
Wow.
That's what the three teams averaged.
Well, an amazing run for high school football for anybody. And Rob, I know you're representing all the teams. You graduated in 68, but thank you for coming on and representing all the teams. And congratulations to you, all of your teammates, and everyone who was involved with the team of distinction. It's a tremendous honor. Thank you for sharing with us.
Well, thank you, and I hope everybody can join us on that November 11th celebration. And look at the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame website for tickets. And thank you so much for the opportunity to represent the three teams. And there was many other people that could have been sitting here where I am. But thanks again.
My pleasure, Rob. You have a nice day.
Thank you for the call.
You bet. Rob Santa Maria, captain of the 67 squad, and he's doing my job there. He's promoting ticket sales. You got to like it when the guest does the host's job. So, yes, Kenmore West grads, if you want to go see the team of distinction be honored in person, Tuesday, November 11th is the dinner at the Greater Buffalo Convention Center. Tickets are available at gbshof.com right now. When you go there, click on the link, and it's very simple. Even I can figure out. And it's early bird ticket pricing, so take advantage of that, and that is going on through October 14th. And before we close, I promise I'll talk to you a little bit about some of the auction items that are available there as well. When we get back, now, in addition, the class of inductees does include some people who are being honored posthumously. We'll talk about two of those with Ron Carr, board member for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. That's next on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
Thank you very much. Posthumously being inducted this year, Jim Peel and Joey Giambra. Now, Jim was a football coach and baseball coach, University at Buffalo, later director of athletics, and Giambra was a very well-known middleweight boxer. Both of them are being inducted. Now, Ron Carr is going to join us. He's a board member for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, and he is the guy we tap into for knowledge on those being inducted posthumously. So we're going to talk a little bit about Joey and Jim with him. Ron, it's Howard. Nice to talk to you again. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How you doing, Howard?
Doing well. Thank you very much. So, yeah, let's start with Jim Peel, and let's talk a little bit about his accomplishments. And he had multiple jobs during his time at UB. Let's start with football coach and how that career went and what made him successful or what did he do as the football coach of the Bulls?
Well, he came over from Purdue. He was a big-time quarterback, I believe it was, at
mm-hmm.
Purdue.
Yep.
Came over with another Purdue alumni, George Van Bibber, and he came as assistant coach. Van Bibber left after one season, so So James Field took over in 1936, and he coached until 1947. Turned the program around big time. He struggled in the beginning. His record was like 17-29-1 to start, and then his last two seasons went 12-4-1 and ended up with 38-34 and one record. And probably, I think you could credit with incredible organizational skills is why he was able to turn the program around. Everything that he touched at UB was all about organizing and setting it up to be successful.
Now, there are two questions I have, but I'm going to tie them into one. One, I think, happened when he was the head coach. The other, I believe, happened when he was the AD. So from what I read about Jim, he played the first African-American player in the history of UB football. Now, I didn't know about that, Ron, but I did know about the second question, and that was the 1958 team, because I think they were honored just a few years ago, a team that declined an invitation to the Tangerine Bowl because the bowl organizers would not let the two African-American players on the UB roster participate in the game, so they decided, we're not going to play in your game. Can you talk a little bit about those? Because that really stands out. That tells you more about Jim Peel, the person, as opposed to the coach or the AD.
Yeah, and and interesting enough, in the 1942, the name of the player was Leland Jones, who his story is pretty incredible himself. He was one of the first to be accepted into the Naval Academy, and at first African-Americans to be accepted in Naval Academy, and then they got a hold of him, told him he failed his physical out of the blue.
Oh, boy.
So Jim Peel took the team down to John Hopkins, and he told the AD John Hopkins, listen, I have an African American who's going to be playing the game. Are you okay with it? And the guy said, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. It ended up being the first time, and the NCAA's research, it was the first time that an African American ever played below the Mason-Dixon line.
Wow.
Leland Jones wasn't allowed to stay at the hotel with the players,
yep.
but other than that, it really was a nondescript moment, but a historically significant moment. And then the same thing with the Tangerine Bowl. I think by that time, Jim Peel lost his naivety. And when they told him that they wouldn't let the two players play, he said, enough, we're not even bothered. Mm. We're not even going down there. Not going to mess around with it.
Well, good for him. So in his career as AD, we'll get to Joey Giambra in a moment, but last thing about Jim, I read that he has been referred to as the father of modern intercollegiate athletics at UB. Why?
He did everything. Any possible administrative position that could be held, he took care of it, and he did it well. He started the baseball program in 1949, and not only did he start the baseball program, but he picked out the lot where the field was going to be. He got a bunch of players together, got the maintenance crew together, cut down the trees himself.
Wow.
He built the backstop in his garage, and he managed the team until 1968. What's involved in UB sports, he took care of it. He was there.
So that's Jim Peel. Now, the other gentleman you're going to talk about with us is Joey Giambra. Let's start with the basic question. Who was Joey Giambra?
The guy was he's fascinating, absolutely fascinating person. He's a boxer. He grew up in Buffalo in the 1930s, 13 kids during the Depression. He started out shining shoes. That was his way to make money. And then I read in an interview that he earned a little bit more money for the family by being the only Italian kid that could sing an Irish song. When he's 13 years old, he got his shoe shine kit robbed, and the kid beat the crap out of him that robbed it. He said, enough of that. That's not happening again. So he wandered into the gym someplace, and he met some guy there who taught him how to box, and that's it. He became a boxer after that.
I'm reading his bio, and I'm reading about all the fights he won and his record, which was amazing, and there's one glaring question, and that is, I read that he never got a shot for a championship fight at the middleweight level. Why not?
A couple of reasons. It was like a perfect storm of reasons. Number one, he was the leading contender. I think we're talking about like 1953 or so. He's leading contender for the middleweight title, and he gets drafted. He's out for 2 years, and he's saying to himself, well, I just served 5 years in the Naval Academy. What am I being drafted for? But he He did boxing, taught boxing those 2 years. And then he came back afterwards, and he worked his way back up, and he had a non-title fight against a guy named Boba Olsen. And the title fight was in Boba Olsen's home park, the Cow Palace in San Francisco, I believe. It's where the Golden Seals used to play, if I'm correct. Could be wrong. And he beat up on him pretty good, and they gave Olsen the unanimous decision because they were setting everything up for Olsen to fight Sugar Ray Robinson.
Yeah.
And the crowd, even at the Cow Palace, booed it. And Olsen told him, as soon as I take care of Robinson, you get a shot for the title. Olsen lost to Sugar Ray Robinson four times. Mm. Never got the shot. And then the final one was, and again, it's sort of funny. There was a huge influence by the mob back then in boxing. In fact, Giambra actually wrote a book about it, and he ran into the guy from Madison Square Garden, the guy that ran Madison Square Garden, and the guy told him, listen, I need you to get rid of your manager. I need you to take one of my boys as manager, and then we'll give you a shot for the title. And Giambra refused, and the manager told Giambra, man, you're naive. Giambra didn't know what naive meant. He just stood there and stared at him, and that was the last he heard of it. And so much for his title, you know, chance of a title fight as well.
Now, you know, you guys have done this before posthumously inducting people. I'd be curious, what do you think it means to the surviving family members that their loved one is getting honored like this?
That's a wide range of emotion. You know, to give you an example of Jim Peel. He passed away 50 years ago, I believe it was. And, you know, you're bringing the name up again, and it sort of give a chance to relive all those memories again, relive all the things that happened. I remember years ago I was hosting Jim Constante. He's from Strikersville. He was inducted into our Hall of Fame posthumously. And I met his daughter, talked to his daughter, and I was planning a trip to Cooperstown. So she invited me to his old fishing cabin, and she had his World Series ring, and she was telling me all the stories about him playing baseball. It was so cool. And even last year, we put in Ed Van Tine, and the whole Hamburg, not the whole Hamburg, but, you know, quite a few members of the Hamburg lacrosse family that played with him in the 70s and 80s showed up for his induction ceremony. And it's pretty, I mean, that's what it's all about. Those are the cool memories and the cool stories. You get talking to these people. That's what it's all about.
Now, you're also on the part of the Veterans Committee. What function does that committee serve for the Hall?
We are the ones that research, and we nominate. Every year we nominate 8 people, and that gets brought to the general board to be inducted posthumously. A lot of research, and a lot of just, you know, talking about these guys. It's because it's very difficult when you're talking about people who nobody's ever seen live, you know, and that's in some of the cases. So a lot of research is involved, and, you know, you have to be able to tell a lot of stories. And we present to the board, these are the guys we want you to think about, and they elect 4 of those.
But I would think, I'm a history nerd, you're a history teacher. I would think doing that research, that's got to be a lot of fun because of the stories you are unearthing and you're learning about.
Man, Howard, I love that. That's the part. And I don't know how many people out there can actually read an old newspaper and get anything out of it. It seems like the lost art. But I absolutely love doing that. And especially when you find these nuggets. I remember John Boutte, he's on a board, and he's very well known in the Buffalo area. A couple of years ago, he sent me a text. He said, oh, my God, wait till you hear about this person I just found. He was going through old wrestling magazines, and he found a story about the first ever female wrestling champion. And sure enough, she was from Buffalo, Cora Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up...
Oh, she was in. Yeah, that's right. She's in.
Yeah. It just came out of the blue. No, we never heard of her before. And you know, you stumble on these things, and it's, you know, like... You know, it's like uncovering some gold someplace. Incredible.
But that's great because it's shining a light on some amazing stories in Buffalo sports history that either nobody knew or forgot about because they happened such a long time ago. So.
Oh yeah, we didn't start with the 1960 Buffalo Bills. We've been around for a long time.
Well, great work as always, Ron, and always nice to talk to you on the show. Thank you very much for talking about Jim and Joey today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Ron Carr joining us, board member for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. We'll get a break, come back, and before we close, I have to tell you about some of the amazing items that are available right now in the online auction at gbshof.com, and we are moments away from the top of the hour and the moment everyone waits for the entire week. Saturday, 11 o'clock, Derek Kramer, Joe Cali. People are outside in the parking lot banging on the door to the offices going, we want Derek and Joe. Or, well, maybe that's just in their heads. All right, they're coming up at 11. Stay tuned. All right, so here's the deal. Ticket sales, gbshof.com, Tuesday, November 11th, Buffalo Convention Center. Cocktail reception at 5, dinner at 7, speeches to follow. Great event. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Go again. If you've never been there, you should. If you're a sports fan and you're here in Western New York and you've never gone to one of these dinners, you need to go. Auction items. When you go to gbshof.com to buy tickets, you will see a link pop up right away for the online auction. There's something for everybody. If you're a music fan, there is memorabilia signed from Taylor Swift, the late Ozzy Osbourne, Jelly Roll, who I have no idea what he does in terms of singing, but I do see him on wrestling. Let's see, someone named Sabrina Carpenter, Rod Stewart. I know that name. So music, sports, you have memorabilia signed by some guy by the name of Josh, looks like Allen, Josh Allen, anybody? Just Joey Bosa. Dalton Kincaid, Jim Kelly. You are a golf fan, Scottie Scheffler. Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Tiger Woods. A fair to decent group of golfers. There's some Bryson DeChambeau material in there as well, memorabilia. Let's see what else. There's basketball stuff, Larry Bird. Personally, I'm going to pass on that one because I hate the Celtics, but that's really cool stuff. There's something there from the Miracle on Ice team, the 1980 U.S. Olympic team that won the gold medal at Lake Placid. There's an item from George Foreman. How about Bill Murray and Chevy Chase from Caddyshack? What a great movie. You can bid on that. So I'm telling you. Oh, by the way, I left out this part because I'm hoping nobody bids on them and they just go to me. Resort vacations in Hawaii, in Mexico, Atlantis. I mean, there's just tons of great stuff. So, hey, Syracuse fans. Donovan McNabb signed jersey. So go to the online auction at gbshof.com and place a bid. All right, I got to get out of here because Derek and Joe are here and they're going to get you Sports Talk Saturday and get you ready for a busy weekend in sports, including, of course, Sunday Night Football with the Bills. That's coming up in moments. Thank you, Evan DePasquale, for producing the show. As always, a great job. And folks, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show. Get your tickets for the Hall of Fame Induction Dinner at gbshof.com. The Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show has been brought to you by David Adams Card World, Canal Bank, and Osaic Wealth.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.